Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are undertaking a mission to completely change how you see the natural world.
That's not an exaggeration either.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
We're diving into Kenneth Falconer's work on fractal geometry.
Well,
it's basically a new mathematical language.
It is. It's a language for everything that's rough and jagged and, you know, complex all around us.
Things that normal geometry just can't handle.
Exactly. I mean, we grew up learning about perfect spheres and straight lines and cones. That's Euclidean geometry.
Right.
But as Falconer points out, that's a huge mismatch with reality. Nature doesn't really do straight lines.
Nature is messy.
It's messy, and that's the point.
So when you try to measure something like a coastline or, I don't know, a river network, those simple shapes are just, they're totally inadequate.
They're approximations at best, not really descriptions.
So the central question Falconer is asking is, how can we actually describe and measure the real complexity of a fern or a cloud or a mountain?
And fractals are the answer. They're the tools for modeling what he calls organized roughness.
Organized roughness. I like that.
It's about finding the pattern in the messiness. We're sort of learning to see the universe with a new, more honest pair of eyes.
Okay, so before we get into the weird dimensions and infinite coastlines, let's talk about the person behind this, Kenneth Falconer.
Right.
What makes him the authority here?
Well, he's a professor of pure mathematics at the University of St. Andrews. But the key thing is, he didn't just write a book about fractals.
He helped build the whole field.
He's one of its principal architects, yeah. His main textbook, Fractal Geometry, is basically the Bible for anyone studying this.
So he's not just a popularizer. We're getting this from the source.
We are. He laid the rigorous mathematical groundwork, and that means he can explain it with this incredible clarity.
He's the master craftsman explaining his own trade.
Yeah, precisely. He can take these really dense concepts, like the Hausdorff dimension, which is serious graduate-level math, and make it accessible without dumbing it down.
Okay, so let's unpack his work then. The core purpose seems to be demystifying those, you know, those beautiful chaotic images we see.
The Mandelbrot set.
Yeah, that's the one. He wants to show the powerful but often really simple mathematical rules that create them.
And the central idea really rests on two key concepts. The first is self-similarity.
The idea that small parts of an object look like the whole thing.
Right, statistically at least.
Yeah.
And the second concept, which is the big one, is non-integer dimensions.
Dimensions that aren't just one, two, or three.
Exactly. And Falconer's argument is that this is the essential language we need to actually model reality.
To really get why we need a new language, we have to start with the problem that broke the old one. The coastline paradox.
This is the perfect entry point.
Yeah.
It shows so clearly where Euclidean measurement completely breaks down.
Okay, so if I ask you, how long is the coastline of Britain?
Your answer depends entirely on the size of your ruler.
Right. If I use a huge 100-kilometer ruler, I just get a few points. It's a very smooth, rough estimate.
But then you get a 1-meter ruler.
It's something I'm measuring every little bay, every inlet, every single rock.
And here's the paradox. As your ruler gets smaller and smaller, the total length you measure doesn't settle on a single number.
It just keeps going up.
It actually approaches infinity.
Wait, infinity? What does that even mean? How could a finite island have an infinitely long coastline?
It means that length is the wrong question to ask. The coastline isn't really a one-dimensional line. It's so complex and jagged that it's starting to fill up space.
It's more than a line, but it's less than a flat plane.
You got it. And that challenge to our intuition is where Falconer begins. From there, he introduces us to these mathematical monsters that came before fractals.
Right. So even before Mandelbrot coined the word fractal in the 70s, mathematicians had stumbled upon these shapes that just didn't behave.
They really didn't. They were called monsters because they were these shocking failures of intuition. They didn't fit into any of the neat boxes of classical geometry.
Let's talk about one, the Cantor set.
Okay. So you start with just a plain straight line.
And you cut out the middle third?
Yep. Just remove it. Now you have two smaller lines left.
And you do the exact same thing to those two lines.
And you just keep repeating that process on and on an infinite number of times.
So what are you left with?
Something totally paradoxical. You have an infinite number of points remaining.
But the total length of all those points is zero.
All dust, no substance. It's like punching infinite holes in a line until there's nothing left.
And then there's the Koch snowflake, which is maybe even weirder.
I think so. You start with an equilateral triangle.
And on the middle third of each side, you stick another, smaller equilateral triangle pointing outwards.
And again, you repeat that rule forever. The shape that emerges has this astonishing property.
It has a finite area. You can color it in. It takes up a measurable amount of space.
But its perimeter, the length of its boundary, is infinite.
An infinitely long line that fits inside a finite box.
And that's where classical geometry just throws up its hands. It completely collapses. You have to rethink what measurement even is.
So the lesson from these monsters is that these shapes don't live in one or two or three dimensions.
They exist somewhere in between. And that somewhere in between is the heart of fractal geometry.
Which brings us to the most important idea from Falconer, the fractal dimension itself.
This is the mathematical core. It's a non-integer number that gives you a precise measure of an object's roughness, its complexity.
Okay, to get the intuition, you need to think about scaling.
Exactly. With a normal shape, the dimension tells you how its size changes when you scale it up or down.
Or like a simple line, it's one-dimensional. If you make it three times longer, you get three copies of the original. That's 3 to the power of 1.
A square is two-dimensional. Scale it by 3, and you can fit 9 smaller squares inside. That's 3 to the power of 2.
And a cube, 3D, scale by 3 gives you 27 smaller cubes, 3 to the power of 3.
The dimension is the exponent. That's the key.
So what happens when you apply that logic to something like the Koch curve?
Well, when you magnify a piece of the Koch curve by a factor of 3, you find it's made up of 4 self-similar copies of the original.
So the equation is 4 equals 3 to the power of d, where d is the dimension.
And when you solve for d, you get a dimension of about to 1.26.
And that number, 1.26, is the magic.
It is. It's a rigorous, quantifiable measure of its jaggedness. It tells you it's more complex than a 1D line, but less space-filling than a 2D plane.
It makes roughness into something you can actually calculate, but that's for a perfect mathematical shape. How do you do that for a real coastline?
Falconer explains the practical method, which is called the box counting dimension.
Box counting.
Yeah, it's what scientists actually use. You just lay a grid of boxes over an image of the shape, say a satellite photo of a coastline. Then you count how many boxes have a piece of the coastline in them.
Okay, and then you just use a smaller grid.
Exactly. You repeat it with smaller and smaller boxes. The rate at which the number of filled boxes increases as the box size shrinks, that rate gives you the dimension.
Wow. So you can literally calculate the fractal dimension of anything.
A cloud, a river system, a fault line, anything.
Which leads to maybe the most mind-blowing part, how all of this complexity comes from unbelievable simplicity.
Yes. It's not about complex blueprints. It's all about iteration, just repeating simple rules over and over.
And the mathematical framework for this is called iterated function systems, or IFS.
It's the recipe book for making fractals.
The classic example has to be the Barnsley fern.
Oh, absolutely.
You see a picture of it. It looks like a photorealistic drawing of a fern. It's beautiful. You'd assume it takes, I don't know, thousands of lines of code.
But it's generated by just 4 incredibly simple rules.
Only 4.
4 simple affine transformations. That's just a fancy term for rules that shrink, rotate, and move points around. You apply those 4 rules millions of times.
And the fern just emerges.
The complexity isn't designed, it unfolds. It's like the entire fern is encoded in those 4 tiny instructions.
And then, of course, there's the icon, the Mandelbrot set.
The rockstar fractals.
And it comes from a formula that is so simple, it's almost a joke. Mm. Z becomes Z squared plus C.
It's hard to believe all that cosmic, swirly, infinitely detailed complexity comes from just squaring a number and adding another number over and over.
The set is basically a map of which points fly off to infinity and which ones stay put.
And when you zoom into the edge of that map,
you find tiny copies of the whole set repeating forever.
Infinite detail from almost no information. And that's why fractals are so deeply connected to chaos theory.
Right, because chaos isn't just random noise.
Not at all. Often when you have a chaotic system like weather or turbulence in water, the behavior gets drawn towards a fractal shape. It's called a strange attractor.
So fractals are the geometry of chaos, the order hidden inside the mess.
That's a perfect way to put it.
So let's pull back and look at the big themes here. The first one has to be this idea of a new geometry for the natural world.
It really is. It's the realization that Euclidean geometry is, well, inadequate. We have to stop seeing roughness as a mistake or a flaw.
And start seeing it as a fundamental feature of reality. Something to be studied and measured.
Right. The second big theme is that simplicity generates complexity.
We saw that with the Barnsley Fern. It's such a powerful mental model.
It is. It suggests that complex outcomes don't always need complex causes. You just need simple, effective rules that you can apply iteratively.
So if you're facing a huge problem, maybe don't look for a huge, complicated solution.
Maybe look for the small, simple rule that, if repeated, generates the result you want.
Then theme three, which is the big intellectual leap, is the redefinition of dimension.
We're so trained to think in integers, one, two, or three dimensions.
But Falconer shows us it's a continuous spectrum. And the number itself, like 1.26, is a real quantitative measure of complexity.
It transforms a vague idea like jaggedness into actual science. That's the whole paradigm shift.
And finally, theme four, self-similarity as a unifying principle.
You start to see it everywhere. The branches of a tree mirroring the whole tree, the veins in a leaf, a lightning bolt.
It's one of the universe's most efficient ways of organizing itself.
Falconer has some amazing lines that just capture these ideas perfectly.
There's one that sums up the whole premise. He says, "Traditional geometry offers a poor description of the natural world. Clouds are not spheres and mountains are not cones. Nature's geometry is one of roughness and fragmentation."
That's it. That's the permission slip to stop trips to fit nature into these perfect human-made boxes.
Irregularity isn't the error, it's the reality.
And on the idea of efficiency, he says, self-similarity is nature's way of achieving maximum complexity with minimal information.
That's the whole lesson of the Fern right there.
It is. Minimal genetic code, maximum organism.
And he also nails the mathematical insight. A fractal's dimension is not necessarily a whole number. This fractal dimension provides a precise, objective measure of an object's complexity.
And how thoroughly it fills the space it occupies. That last part is so important.
Then there's the link to chaos, which I love. What we call chaos may simply be order that we have not yet learned to perceive.
Which is such a hopeful idea, that there's structure even in the most volatile things.
So let's talk about applications. The most immediate one is just going outside.
The fractal safari.
Yeah, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
Once you know this, you look at a tree or a head of broccoli completely differently.
You see the repeating patterns everywhere. A river belta, a crack in the pavement.
But it's not just pretty. It's functional.
Deeply functional. Think about our bodies. The branching of our lungs, the bronchial tree, and our entire circulatory system are fractal.
And why? Why does evolution favor that pattern?
It's all about efficiency. The body needs to maximize surface area for gas exchange in the lungs, for nutrient delivery in the blood. But it has to do it inside a very small, confined volume.
And fractals are the most efficient way to pack a huge surface into a small space.
Exactly. The human body is elegantly fractal.
And in technology, this has completely transformed computer graphics. CGI artists don't hand draw every ridge on a mountain.
No way! They use fractal algorithms to grow a landscape. It looks totally natural and infinitely detailed because it's using nature's own rules.
And you mentioned fractal image compression before.
Right. Instead of storing an image as millions of pixels, which is huge, you find the small mathematical formula, the IFS code, that generates the image.
You're storing the recipe, not the cake.
That's a great way to put it. And Mandelbrot himself applied this to the stock market. He noticed that price swings show volatility clustering.
Meaning that big swings tend to be followed by big swings and small by small.
Yes. And that pattern repeats, whether you're looking at a chart for a day, a month, or a decade. It suggests a fractal structure to market behavior.
My personal takeaway from all this, my real wow moment, is still the Barnsley Fern.
Yeah.
The fact that all that intricate biological-looking detail comes from just four tiny instructions, it just blows my mind. It makes me wonder where else in life we're overcomplicating things that could be solved with a few simple, repeated actions.
For me, the big lesson is that irregularity isn't noise. It's information. It's structure.
Right.
Falconer's work shows that the world's apparent randomness is governed by this beautiful, underlying mathematical order. It's an invitation to stop looking for perfection and start appreciating the organized roughness of what's really there.
It's almost like this deep dive isn't just about a topic. It's about getting a new pair of eyes.
It is, to see the world not as a set of flawed approximations of perfect shapes, but as the beautiful fragmented thing it actually is.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.